I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Vancouver, we are coming at you. February 28th, 2020. Our live show is going to be held at the Biltmore Cabaret. Tickets are available right now. Doors open at 7. And you're not going to want to miss this because we are sitting down with our new best friend, Maya. She's going to tell us all about the time that she had a horrible head-on car collision that left her in a coma. We'll be touching on avascular necrosis. I don't know what the hell that is. PTSD, osteoarthritis. And, of course, we will also be talking about her upcoming amputation. It's going to be a wonderful night. We can't wait to see your beautiful faces. Again, that is February 28th at the Biltmore Cabaret. Doors open at 7. If you want your tickets, get them now. www.sickboypodcast.com/shows. Mwah.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast that talks about what it's like to be sick. This week, we delve into misconceptions surrounding obesity with our expert guest, Meredith. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, like in a way.
It could definitely become more our area of expertise.
Yes, there's always lots to learn. Yeah. Which I think is a perfect segue into what we're going to be talking about today, because although we were just talking about our level of expertise when it comes to audio engineering, we're not talking about that today. Today we're talking to Meredith about your expertise or your path to expertise in the world of dietetics.
Yes.
Ah, dietetics.
I find that such an an interesting word.
Dietetics? Or dietitians?
Dietetics. Because I always, like when I don't know, growing up, I thought of dietitians, but never heard the word dietetics. So when I had a roommate who was in dietetics, and I just find it like really interesting hearing that word now, because I'm like, oh, geez, that's a word that I never knew about.
If you had said dietetics to me before that moment right there where I was looking for the word, any other moment before, I would have been like, what the fuck's that?
But you've heard of dietitians.
I've heard of Dianetics. I'd be like, is that some sort of Scientology? Or like, what's going on here?
I've gotten that many times.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
And like, where people go, oh, shit.
Wait, what?
She's one of those.
Yeah. And what is, like, no, not at all.
What
not
is
that.
Dianetics?
Dianetics is the, it's like the Scientology book.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of the Scientology Bibles, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
Apparently, it's actually a really good book. Like, I know some people who've read it and have gone, like, I actually found it kind of helpful. But that's neither here nor there. So why don't you explain to Brian and myself, more so me, I think, since you lived with a dietitian. Why don't you explain to us what is a dietitian?
Okay. I guess mostly dietitians work in variety of settings, mostly around food and nutrition. So a lot of dietitians work in hospitals. So if someone's sick, and I know you've worked with dietitians, Jared.
Yes, I have.
If they're sick, they can help them modify their diet to help them, you know, feel better or whatever it is that they need. But they also work in community settings. So they would do policy around food. They work in food service, so they create menus and that kind of thing. So it's really anything to do with food and nutrition around managing, treating disease.
Is it a healthcare profession?
It is a healthcare profession.
Okay.
Regulated healthcare profession.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the deal with the Canada Food Guide?
Yeah.
Is that okay.
Has it changed? Like, I remember when I was a kid, it was like you got
like grain on the bottom, and then like the next level, it was a pyramid. Grain, like
milk,
but yeah, milk, meat, and an orange. Like, I think that's what it was.
That's exactly what it was. It's different now.
Oh, yeah. It is? Okay.
Yeah. But it's funny because they were always like, you know, you hear now, like, eat the rainbow, like, get your colorful vegetables and stuff. But I remember Canada's food guide was, like, displayed as a rainbow, except in the rainbow, instead of being, like, colorful fruits and vegetables, that was a piece of it. But, like, it was mostly, like...
I got it right here, Bri.
Dairy farmers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the green, I don't know if this is, like, up to date. Let's see... if this is up to date.
It literally is a rainbow.
It is. So the green rainbow, you've got your apples and your grapes and your melons and your potatoes and there's some legumes in there, and I think that's broccoli. Okay, and then the yellow part of the rainbow looks like bread, cereal, crackers.
This is definitely not up to date.
Okay, and then the blue rainbow is milk, yogurt, kefir. I always say kefir.
I never remember how to say it.
Kefir.
I think that's right.
I think that is right, but I say kefir too.
Powdered milk. Ugh. Okay, and then the red, so this is the last color. It's only four colors. Green, yellow, blue, and red is beans, fish, chickens. That looks like a packet of like aioli or something.
That's such a broad.
And an egg, one egg.
That's so broad. Beans, chicken,
is
fish.
That old school?
That is very, yeah. So now the Canada's food guide, and also, you know, I'm not that knowledgeable about the food guide.
Okay, sure.
What I know about the food guide, it's now a plate.
Oh, okay.
Last year they changed it to a plate. So now there's not this like emphasis on serving sizes and all this kind of stuff. It's a plate.
You mean there's not this emphasis on what the lobbyists have paid for to be as part of the food guide?
Yes. Yeah. That is true. There's no hardly any dairy on the plate anymore.
No, yeah.
There's hardly any meat on the plate anymore.
It does look like there's some sort of dip on the plate, though.
I think
like,
that's Greek yogurt.
Greek yogurt. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
I love Greek yogurt.
Fuck yeah.
It's very tasty.
So you got your whole grain foods. You got your make water your drink of choice. Okay, great. Eat your protein foods. Have plenty of vegetables and fruits, and that's all they really say on there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other stuff if you like dig around the website about like mindful eating and cooking and all that kind of stuff.
But right,
it's really different than it used
mindful
to be.
Eating, like from the in terms of like from a yoga practice, mindful eating, like sitting with an apple and mindfully eating the whole apple.
I feel like it's probably not quite to that extent,
right?
And I feel as though a lot of the time when we talk about mindful eating, it's like make sure you don't eat too much, which is kind of still this prescription or instruction of how we should eat,
right?
Which isn't exactly in line with the way I think about food,
right?
So yeah.
So
yeah.
This is so. Full disclosure, you and I work together. Mm-hmm. We teach at the same yoga studio.
Yeah.
So, I've known you now for...
8 years.
Like, 8 or 9 years mm-hmm. or so. And we were at a staff party the other night, mm-hmm. and we had a few drinks, and somehow we got on the topic of, like, what you're studying, mm-hmm. and you brought up how you were doing a lot of research in... like weight bias mm-hmm. in healthcare.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And you start talking about it and I was like, oh wow, this is really challenging a lot of views and viewpoints that I just innately have mm-hmm. about weight.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of those viewpoints being oftentimes when I see someone who's overweight, mm-hmm. I think to myself, oh man, I'm worried about this person's health.
Yeah.
You know? Like, mm-hmm. I hope that they are okay.
Yeah.
And I think you stepped in and you were like,
yeah.
So what is weight bias?
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Yeah, for sure. So really weight bias, and in a lot of ways, I think when we talk about weight bias, it almost makes it seem like it can be bias against people across the weight spectrum. Whereas really I'm talking about like bias towards people who are fat.
Right.
And when I say fat, I don't mean it in a negative way. I use it in the way that like the political fat acceptance movement uses that word. So fat is just a natural descriptor of body size. And I know not everyone feels that way. And I will also acknowledge that I am not a fat person. I am a thin person. So I use that word in the way that kind of fat people have talked about it,
mm-hmm.
and what I've learned from other fat people, from fat people. So really we're talking about bias towards people in larger bodies. You know, they get treated differently. They don't get treated the same at the doctor. They often get dismissed at the doctor because, again, people just think, oh, you're unhealthy because you're fat or because you're overweight.
Right.
And they don't get proper treatment.
We've had somebody talk to us about, I can't remember who it was, but somebody who we were talking about, I'm doing air quotes, obesity. Mm-hmm. And the person was telling us that when they go to the doctor, the doctor immediately jumps to the fact that mm-hmm. they are overweight, that is causing whatever health problem or concern they've mm-hmm. come in for. Is that what you're talking about when you say that medical professionals might overlook or tend to overlook patients who are overweight?
Yeah, that's definitely what I mean. So like there's a story that got a lot of media traction last year about this woman. I think she lived in BC and she had been feeling really unwell for like years, and she kept going to the doctor and being like, there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is. Like, I know there's something wrong. And they kept just being like, lose weight and you'll be fine. And then eventually, I don't exactly remember how it came about, but she went to the doctor and it turned out that she had cancer. And she had like hardly any time left to live. Whereas if they had properly diagnosed her when she first went to the doctor, she could have potentially
sure.
been treated
right.
and survived. So that's kind of one way that weight bias shows up. And that's how it shows up in healthcare, but it also, you know, fat people also get hired less, they get paid less. You know, they get a lot of stigma from lots of people, like, you know, moving around through the world as someone in a larger body, you get mm-hmm. treated kind of shitty mm-hmm. a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like we've even heard on mm-hmm. the podcast of like, you know, people feeling like they get stared at or, mm-hmm. you know, is this something that you, so this idea of like weight bias, is this something that you study as a dietitian, in the study of dietetics?
Yes. So we definitely talk about it in dietetics. And that's actually like what I specifically am interested in studying. So I did my master's research on weight bias, but specifically in dietetics. So for my master's, I did interviews with people in my profession. So students studying dietetics who are in larger bodies about
right.
how they felt about their experiences being a person in a larger body in a profession that talks a lot about healthy weight. And I use that in quotations, obesity, again, in quotations, all those kinds of things. Yeah.
So, okay. So, I'm trying to figure like where to go. Like,
yeah.
Why do you use quotations when you say healthy weight or the word obesity?
Mm-hmm. I mean, 'cause really we can't dictate or define a healthy weight based on a number. Because it's going to be different for every single person.
Right.
And it's, you know, the whole idea of healthy weight is based on the body mass index, which
is the BMI bullshit?
Yes.
Right.
I'm BMI. Overweight by the BMI and by the body mass index.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like it's I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day and mm-hmm. he was like, I am obese on the BMI because he's whatever, like 5'5".
Yeah.
But like, he's fucking jacked up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he weighs like, I don't know, maybe 200 pounds because it's just all muscle.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, I guess I'm an obese person.
Yeah. Yeah.
On
BMI
that scale.
Is really flawed.
Right.
But we still use it a lot. And
why
like,
do we use it? What, like, what's the...
I mean, I think it's kind of just embedded into healthcare now.
Mm.
Like a lot of things are, and a lot of it takes time to change it. Even though the body mass index was originally created by an insurance company and a statistician, it wasn't invented by a healthcare provider.
Why?
Well, it was about, you know, to look at statistically how do different groups of people based on their weight, how does that impact their health? And then how might that impact the amount of insurance that we how much we charge them for insurance. And so it was never meant to be an individual thing. It was always supposed to be about a population kind of
right.
index, but now we use it individually in a way that doesn't really make sense.
Now,
are there better ways to measure what would maybe be a healthy weight? It's hard to navigate this conversation.
No, it's very different from what most people think about weight, like the weight, what I usually talk about. So I don't think there's really a benefit to trying to quantify healthy weight with a number, because it's going to be so different for everybody.
Right.
Yeah. And so like in research, we talk about something called set point weight, that is kind of everybody has a natural weight where their body likes to be when you're kind of living your life, eating in a way that makes you feel good, moving your body a bit, you know, not super stressed out, et cetera. Your body kind of wants to settle there.
Yeah. And I feel like my set point weight would be like 145.
Yeah.
Like 145 pounds and I'm 5'9". Mm-hmm. And like, if I'm not trying to do anything, that's just where I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not getting sick, that's where I stay.
Yeah.
Whereas if I get really sick, I'll drop like drastically.
Yeah.
Or if I can't really gain weight. So like gaining weight is like extremely challenging for me, but also I'm a bit of a unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have a chronic illness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which prevents me from gaining weight. Yeah. But again, everyone's different.
Everyone is different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And like everybody. Yeah. So you can't really quantify it. And I think people, you know, if everybody who's listening thinks about a time in their life when they weren't dieting and trying to lose weight and just like living their life, they probably settled at a place that will be the same every time that happens. So like you know, although it does change over time, most people tend to get a bit bigger as they get older, and
right,
that's fine.
Right.
But yeah, if you think about a time when you weren't dieting, you were just living your life, enjoying food, moving your body in ways you liked, your body probably settled at a point that was easy to stay there.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I think about it, is like, that's healthy weight for you. But it's hard. You can't quantify that. There's no equation.
Right.
To tell us what that is.
Because that may in a female who's 5'8", who happens to also weigh 200 pounds, and that's like where they just kind of settle into.
Yeah.
That's just their like set weight point.
Exactly.
Is it?
Yeah.
But someone might look at that and go, "Oh, well, you're just fucking eating McDonald's every day."
Exactly.
Well, like, yeah. So what do you like?
What
obviously,
are you doing
you're not
wrong?
Obviously you're not moving your body. Mm-hmm.
My question, though, about eating habits, and or not just eating habits, but about like living a healthy life.
Yeah.
Is your message about what is important? The fact that you're basically, you know, getting adequate sleep, eating a healthy diet that is the plate version of the Canada's food guide, not the rainbow version, getting adequate exercise or moving in a way, as you said, that makes you happier, that you enjoy. Is that more so what you're saying is important, rather than, you know, we don't need to weigh a certain amount in terms of a number. We don't need to look a certain way, as long as we're doing these things that make us quote unquote healthy,
yeah,
then that's what's really important.
Yeah. So like, I think as a future healthcare provider, because I will say that I'm still a student, that it's important to focus on those like health promoting behaviors. So eating in a way that feels good, eating intuitively. So kind of being aware of hunger and fullness, eating things you like, that's important. Moving in ways that are good, you know, reducing your stress, all that kind of stuff.
But what if you like candy and
okay.
Diet Coke?
That is okay.
And like 10 Diet Cokes a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay? Okay, so here's the point where I feel like this gets divisive.
I was going to ask a question about that specifically.
Yeah.
In saying, like, you say that's okay, but is the reason that you like candy because sugar is a drug that is, by all accounts, been shown to have the same impact on the brain as, you know, doing cocaine.
So, I do not agree with that. But
okay,
we can talk about that.
But
this is good. Okay, I like this.
Yeah. Right. So I'm interested in that then. So yeah. From
like,
my perspective,
don't we know that, like, okay, like it isn't there like concrete evidence that Mountain Dew is not good for you?
There is evidence around like general healthy eating patterns. Like,
sure.
It's basically good for most people, unless they have some sort of illness that limits that, to eat more vegetables and fruits.
Right. Yeah.
To drink less alcohol, not smoke, like do exercise sometimes. Like those things are pretty much good for
everybody.
Those
are good. Those are like just
most of the time.
Most of the time, those are good things.
But there's nothing objectively wrong with eating cake, eating an Oreo, drinking pop sometimes.
Sure. But is there something objectively wrong with doing that all of the time?
I mean, I think most people probably would find if they eat like that all the time, they wouldn't feel that great.
Right, sure.
For most people.
Sure.
And so what I always, you know, encourage is like this model called intuitive eating, where you pay attention to your body's cues, which makes a lot of sense. You know, you're a yoga teacher, kind of like this body awareness of like, how do you feel when you're eating in this way versus this way?
Yeah.
And most people would find that they feel better if they're eating a variety of foods, and that can incorporate candy and stuff.
I have a question specifically about
that. That makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me too, but I'm curious if, for example, a couple of years ago, I was not taking care of myself in terms of like getting enough sleep, eating well, quote unquote.
I'm enjoying the quote unquote. It's good.
And exercising. And I made a I made a conscious decision to be better at those three things. And I noticed that in terms of my mental health, there was a significantly positive change that happened. And I'm based on what you said, I'm wondering if that is the effect of me consciously changing those things and then mentally thinking that it's going to make a positive difference. So because I mentally believe that it will make a positive difference, it does almost as if it's a placebo effect. Or are those just three healthy things that I'm doing that are causing me to experience healthy, positive benefits because those scientifically are healthy things to do?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, those are good behaviors to incorporate. Like most people would feel well if they're doing those things. But I also think it's always, for me, it's always important to underline the fact that like if someone doesn't have the capacity or just doesn't have the interest in engaging in those behaviors, that's fine too. Because there's nothing wrong and there's no, you're not a good person if you engage in those things and you're not a bad person if you don't.
Right.
They're, you know, if you don't engage in those behaviors, you're still good and you still deserve respect and you still deserve proper health care, etc.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Sure. Yes, I fully agree with that.
I'm nodding my head as well.
Is it not correct to say that, okay, I know someone, I personally know someone who, when they have coffee, which they have coffee about two or three times a day. So a cup of coffee, in one cup of coffee, they will scoop 10 full tablespoons of sugar.
No.
Yes.
No, they don't.
Yeah. And I get it. Because I get what that, it's like, you're basically making
an island in your coffee.
Totally. But it's also like, it's like, you know, it's like a French vanilla that's not a French vanilla. Like that's, I think that's what's going on there. Because I like sweet things. I love sweet things.
But that's a lot of sugar.
That's a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
Okay. So now this person does this. Is it not just like scientifically proven that if someone does that every day, they are increasing their risk of, say, diabetes?
Yeah, I mean, there is evidence about like increased added sugar consumption and increased risk of chronic
something
health stuff.
Yeah, something.
But you actually have to eat quite a lot of sugar for those impacts to be seen. I can't remember the exact amounts, but it's quite a bit.
10 tablespoons.
That's a lot of sugar.
It's a lot.
And like for, you know, if that person was sitting in front of me and I was talking to them, I would probably talk to them about how that makes them feel. That's
right.
What I care about.
Right.
It's like, are you really feeling great if you're eating, if you're drinking coffee with that much sugar in it? Like, how do you feel after you drink it? Are you all shaky and, you know, because that's what I'm interested in. Like, how do people feel and how can we talk about gentle changes to their life that will improve the way they feel without feeling
like they're bad or they're wrong
or that they're bad or wrong. They're doing that. They were doing something wrong before because they weren't.
Right.
But maybe they weren't doing things that were the best thing to promote their health.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay. So I think I'm starting to wrap my head around where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's less about what is actually occurring and more about the language that's being used mm-hmm. to approach or mm-hmm. or examine mm-hmm. what's currently happening.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like almost like...
But I feel like part of me is like, but Meredith, I want you to say it's bad. Like, because in my head, I'm so like, well, when I saw him doing this, I went, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. This is not good.
But it's,
and he was like, well, I don't know.
Well, because we're so trained to think that like, if you're in a large body, you're doing something wrong, you're lazy and you need to eat less. And we're so trained to think that like, if all you do is eat Oreos and drink pop, then you're a terrible, unhealthy human. Mm-hmm. Like that's just so ingrained into our brains mm-hmm. and that it's really hard to untrain that.
Right.
And it was hard for me, especially as someone who is studying nutrition.
Right.
And understands the value that nutrition can have in people's lives.
Right.
Yeah.
So would you say that it is problematic to, in your opinion, mm-hmm. would you think that it's problematic to even use the word like that is an unhealthy habit?
I try to avoid using words like healthy and unhealthy, good and bad, because mm-hmm. it's just such a value. Like there's so much value in that word and people place so much meaning behind it.
And shame comes from that
and
embarrassment or, you know, or self
flagellation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is the problem, though, is the problem more cultural?
I'm just going to.
Because
open my Red Bull that I just opened, because now I feel.
Validated.
I feel like this is I need this right now. I'm intuitively drinking this very sugary Red Bull.
So is the problem more of a cultural one than a scientific one?
I think so. And I mean,
to elaborate on that a little bit, we live in a culture and a society that is, I believe now even more than ever is focused on like, this idea of like optimization and mm-hmm. success and like, here's how you be the best version of yourself. And I thrive on a lot of that mm-hmm. and I buy into a lot of that. And, you know, I'm the type of person who I'm very conscientious about what I eat. I'm very conscientious about getting enough exercise. And I do believe that I feel motivated and better and fulfilled when I stick mm-hmm. to a more tight or regimented, mm-hmm. like, eating routine or sleeping routine or gym routine. But like when I boil that all down and think about what it is that makes me feel better about all of that is mm-hmm. because I buy into this societal cultural idea that you got to be the best version of yourself. And I'm not saying that like you, I'm not willing to say that that's a good or bad thing. Mm-hmm. It just is the way that, you know, I've kind of chosen to live my life at this point.
Yeah.
And it's fulfilling for me to do that because I feel like I can get the most out of, you know, my day in terms of like doing all of these different jobs and tasks and getting everything done. And it feels good to tick those boxes and get everything done. But is it that ultimately this is just some cultural idea that we've created and scientifically you can still be quote unquote healthy if you don't subscribe to that?
Yeah, I think so. Because really, we live in this culture, like we live in a fat phobic culture that's really fearful of being fat, of fat people, of fatness in general. And I mean, we live in diet culture where like people are very obsessed with controlling what they eat in order to be in a certain size body because we are so... The idea that thinness is healthier is so embedded in us that it's really hard to get away from that. So it's really like a social cultural issue. And yeah, there's nothing wrong at all with engaging in things that make you feel good. Like if you want to eat vegetables because that's good for you, then great. But there's also, you know, it doesn't make you a bad person if you don't do that all the time or if you don't, you know, optimize your health constantly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a podcast that I really like listening to called Food Psych. And the host, her name's Christy Harrison. She often says self-care, not self-control. So when we're approaching behaviors from a place of just caring for ourselves, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And that's probably going to be more health promoting than trying to control everything you do, trying to control your body, trying to control everything you put in your mouth. Like in the end, that is going to be more healthful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess when I like psychoanalyze myself and ask myself like, why do I want to live my life that way? It comes from being like growing up as an athlete.
Yeah.
And, always setting goals and trying to accomplish them. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a lot of the communities that I'm involved in, I think a lot of people think that way, but I think the thing that I'm finding most interesting about this conversation, the thing that I'm taking away from it so far, is that be considerate about people who might not have been raised thinking that way
or
that
or,
mentality.
I mean, not even that, Bri, like even just be considerate about the idea or concept of living your best life means to other people.
That's exactly what, that's what I meant.
It's like mm-hmm. my idea of like living my best self, although I did what was an athlete coming up as a kid, I was also a fucking drama nerd. And like, so if I could just, I'm trying to get as much role playing fucking video games and board games in my life
mm-hmm.
because that satiates me to like, to live out this whatever imaginary fucking world that, and like that's me in my most like thriving, happy self, or storytelling, you know, stuff like this, like mm-hmm. having conversations, you know.
But I mean that in more so in the sense that like it's okay for me to live my life, wanting to
like a fucking bro. Yeah, totally.
But do you feel good about the way that you're living your life?
I feel way better now than I did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And I feel like it's from having this like routine that is, if I psychoanalyze myself, is because, you know, that's the way that I was brought up.
It's the way you
right.
tick.
Right.
Yeah.
And but what I'm saying is that it's okay for people to be like me. It's okay for people to be like you. It's okay for people to mm-hmm. be like you. As long as you're happy and enjoying yourself while you're doing that. And I do believe like taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at it in a different way than I think I would have,
right.
you know, half an hour ago.
Yeah. And I think the whole idea of taking care of yourself is also very like moralized. Like people think of it as like, oh, that person let themselves go. Oh, that person's not taking care of themselves. And like, maybe they are, and maybe they aren't.
But
we just don't know that from looking at somebody,
an interesting
right
from
right.
the visual yeah. aspect. Yeah.
But an interesting
right.
thing about taking care of yourself, and another thing that I learned this week,
mm-hmm.
Actually through reading a book and on Twitter, was we met this incredible author at an event that Jer and I were hosting last week, called CanNet. It was CanNet's public forum, the Cardiac Arrhythmia Network of Canada, and. And there's a line from her book that basically says, self-care is not about taking bubble baths. It's about being kind to yourself.
Mm.
And I was reading her book and read that line while I was sitting in the bathtub. And I was like, this is my self-care. Get in the bathtub and read a book.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, holy fuck, I should actually be thinking more consciously about being kind to myself mm-hmm. while I'm sitting here rather than reading a book and taking a bath to wash away
your sins.
Like negative feelings that I have right now, you know?
Totally.
I think it's about being more compassionate.
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this very short break.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
So I'm guessing, and I think we did discuss this briefly when we were over beers.
Yeah.
Was this train of thought
mm-hmm.
is a bit divisive, even in the world of dietetics.
Yes.
What is the kind of blowback that you've mm-hmm. seen or heard mm-hmm. with this school of thought mm-hmm. versus the, I don't know, like what is the other schools of thought? Like BMI is the way to go mm-hmm. and like, you know.
Yeah. So really right now, like, and not just in dietetics, just in healthcare.
Sure.
There's a lot of discussion about how obesity, and again, I put this in quotations, is a disease that needs to be treated because it's associated with all these negative health outcomes. Which, yes, if you look at the data, larger people in larger bodies, if, you know, on the BMI spectrum, obese people, there's a correlation, there's a relationship with negative health outcomes in those people.
Right.
But we don't have any research to suggest that being in a larger body causes those things. We don't know that being in a larger body causes you to have diabetes or causes you to have heart disease. We just know that there's a relationship between those things.
Isn't that
there's some sort of correlation?
Yeah.
Now, is it
that it's too broad though, in terms of like what would be determined to be obese though? Because like, if there was a person who was, say, and I know you don't like using numbers, but say there was a group of people who were all 500 plus pounds, mm-hmm. is that not like a reason or cause for concern or a reason to think that those people will experience negative health outcomes?
So I think the important thing to think about with that question is that even if in a theoretical world, being obese in quotations was, we could prove that it caused you to have negative health outcomes, we don't really have any good research about how to make people smaller permanently. Like, we know that dieting doesn't work. We know that restricting your food doesn't work long term to make people lose weight permanently. Like, the most likely outcome of trying to diet and make yourself smaller is yo-yo dieting, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, that of like, lose weight, you gain weight, you lose weight, you gain weight. Mm-hmm. And most people who attempt weight loss, that's what's going to happen to them. Because it's very hard for your body to become smaller and stay that size forever. Because mm-hmm. our bodies have a lot of adaptive mechanisms of being like, fuck this, I don't want to be this size. I like, again, set point weight.
Right. That's what my mind immediately mm-hmm. came to when we started touching on this, was mm-hmm. like, well, let's come back to that idea of set point weight, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just a really complex
it's extremely
set
complex.
Of factors that you have. There, you've got the person who, for whatever genetic reason, they actually happen to sit at, let's use the word 500 that you just used, Bri. Mm-hmm. So their set weight's 500 mm-hmm. and they're there because of like genetic factors. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, this other person to the right, they're at 500 and the reason that they might be there is because they've chosen to like just eat pizza. It's mm-hmm. Papa John. So Papa John has eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days or whatever.
Lots of pizza.
This was in the news the other day that he did, that he said that he did this. And then it came out. He came out and he was like, I didn't actually. Papa John's got some controversial stuff.
I feel like Dennis eats 40 pizzas in 30 days.
He might. Right. He might. And his set point weight is
the same as mine.
Same as yours. So you might have someone who just like, who actually chooses to live a lifestyle that has brought them to that point.
Yeah.
Now the person with the set point weight, I don't know. This is full on, like, mm-hmm. I'm just assuming that the chances of them developing diabetes or heart disease might be lower than the person who is putting a lot of like toxic mm-hmm. choices of food into their body.
Yeah. And I don't know what that would look like, but like, yeah, I mean, if someone is above their set point weight for whatever reason, could be lots of things. Mm. If they engage in those health behaviors that we were talking about earlier, it's possible that they could lose weight and maintain that lower weight.
Right.
But it's not through like intentionally dieting that they would do that. It's just like, if you engage in self-care, sometimes you might lose weight through that if you're above your set point weight. Maybe.
Right. Okay.
We don't really ever know, like, because weight is so complicated, and we try to make it seem so simple. And I think healthcare is trying to move away from that idea of like weight loss is just calories in, calories out. They're they're trying to address the fact that weight is complex, but they're still relying on the, on this idea that some weights are like a disease and that we need to treat that. When really it's like, how are we supposed to treat someone's weight when we have no way of making people permanently smaller, but we do have effective ways of treating diabetes and heart disease and knee pain and whatever in people of various sizes. So regardless of someone's body size, we can still treat whatever's going on for them.
Right.
In the same kind of way. And those health behaviors, again, can always come into play and, you know, help people feel better in whatever way they need to if they have the capacity and they want to and all these things. So
it's really hard for I'm trying to listen to everything that you say with a really open mind. And like, obviously from where I come from, I have my own set of personal biases.
Oh yeah, we all do.
However,
I do.
However, I will say that I also am very open-minded to like the way that other people choose to live their lives.
Right.
For example, I don't like force exercise onto Taylor and Jeremy, even though I watch what Jared does sometimes. I'm like, dude, I just wish you would come to a Wednesday morning workout with me.
Stop trying to promote your Wednesday morning workouts on the podcast by pushing it on me.
But
shameless plug.
The reason why I believe so strongly in that stuff and feel like it's really important is because exercise for me is about, it's not about obtaining a certain weight or something like that, or even necessarily a certain look. What it's about is, for me, is it's about community.
Yeah.
So, I feel like it's so hard. I guess my question is, do you come up a lot of, against a lot of like anecdotal evidence where people, if you brought that up and said to somebody that, you know, you could be perceived to be, or you could have a larger body but still be healthy, somebody would say, well, you know, like, I watched The Biggest Loser and I saw this person get this weight off and they're healthier now than ever and blah, blah, blah. Or like, my friend's friend lost all this weight and they've kept it off for ages. So, you know, that must be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Is that a big challenge?
I mean, I come across that a lot. And like, statistically, that's definitely possible because it's not like 100% of people who attempt weight loss don't fail.
Right.
It's a pretty high number, but there are some people who lose weight and maintain weight loss for a long period of time. You know, and sometimes I think about like, what is their quality of life trying to maintain that weight loss? Like, are they continuing to engage in like really restrictive behaviors and, you know, excessive exercise and all these kinds of things? And again, that's not the case for everybody who loses weight and maintains weight loss, but it's the case for lots of people. And yeah, I do come up across that quite often. And then when people bring up The Biggest Loser, I'm just like, that show is terrible. It's so bad. Yeah,
I was actually at the, I spoke at a conference and the conference was held on the like the set of like, it's like a retreat center where they do that show.
Oh, okay.
And it was so bizarre because like it's set on this huge hill. And when you're like walking up the hill, there's like these little post signs that like have the branding of the show on them. And it's like, you know, like you're almost there. Like these kinds of like markers of like, I guess they were running hills or something. I don't fucking know. It was such a bizarre place to be. But I've never seen the show. I can't comment on
it's
that.
It's terrible. Never watch it.
I'm sure it is. So I don't watch garbage television.
So what type of like education do you think the average person needs about body image or weight or I guess body image that we don't have right now?
I mean, it's like this huge cultural shift that has to happen because like fat phobia or like fear of fatness, fear of being overweight is like embedded in all of us. Like I have certain amounts of weight stigma and fat phobia in me, even though I've done all this like learning and unlearning of things. You know, those things still come up into my head sometimes because it's just so natural and embedded in us. Well, it's not natural, it's socialized, but I mean, I think there's lots of information out there. I just don't think it's always getting to people because most of us grew up thinking that we knew that being thin is good and being fat is bad. Mm. And like we go to the doctor and they support that idea. And we talk to our friend and they're on the keto diet or they're doing Beachbody. And it's just so everywhere. But I am seeing this like kind of cultural shift.
I was going to say, you know, like people like Lizzo is one that stands out. Or even our friend Kenzie Brenna, you know, like these like social media influencers who are really promoting like body positivity. And I feel like I'm seeing that shift.
It's happening a lot more and it's really encouraging to me. And I also think like in dietetics and in healthcare, there are more healthcare providers who are kind of practicing from this more critical place and using this model called Health at Every Size. That is kind of this paradigm that we can use to approach healthcare in this, basically in the way that I've been talking about today. It's like, reducing weight stigma, treating people fairly, but then also, you know, promoting those kind of individual healthcare behaviors that we know can benefit people. But a lot of it has to be this social shift of like, until we get rid of weight bias and fat phobia, like, people are still going to continue to be unhealthy because we know that stigma and bias has negative impacts on people's health.
As someone who like, now I've said it a bunch of times, but like as someone who is like, you know, always trying to live that healthy version of life and somebody who is kind of wrapped up in like going to the gym and being conscious about what I eat, what can I do to be more conscientious about not, perpetuating that stigma and being encouraging problematic kind of views.
You can stop telling me to come to your fucking Wednesday morning workouts.
Exactly. No, because
at
no.
The Wave at the bottom of Sackville Street every Wednesday morning at 6:30.
Is that early. I'm just trying to build a community, guys.
It's so early. That's why I don't go.
Very early.
But, again, but that's not about body image coming to those workouts. They're meant to be fun and inclusive and accessible and stuff too. But
it's not about body image. Okay.
But yeah, I guess, not from Jer, from you, what can I be doing?
I mean, I think for people just generally, it's really important for us to be mindful of our language.
Yeah.
So again, avoiding those words of like good, bad, healthy, unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And even just like diet comments that we make of like, oh, I have to make up for that because I ate a bunch of pizza yesterday. It's like, actually, no, you don't. Like you can just keep living your life today. And like, it doesn't matter that you ate pizza yesterday or like, you don't have to beat yourself up because you missed a workout and you don't have to like compensate by eating salad for a week because Christmas happened, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I think a lot of those comments just come out of our mouths because we're so used to it of like, I'm being so bad today. Mm-hmm. I was so good yesterday. And like, what does that even mean? You know, like it doesn't dictate how good or bad we are if we ate pizza or if we ate kale salad. And so I think that like our language is so important. And it's hard. Like I even find myself making comments like that sometimes. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why did you just say that?
Yeah.
But it's so ingrained in us. Like, so I hear those comments from everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think just starting to be mindful of those kinds of things you say. And like, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, Jared, like you kind of saying like, when you see someone who's overweight, you think, I hope they're okay. You know, you almost worry about their health and just being aware of when those things come into your head.
Yeah.
And like being like, wait a second, is that right? Like maybe it's not. So I think, you know, on an individual level, it's just like being extremely aware of your thoughts, what comes out of your mouth. And like, even if you're, you know, in a conversation with someone and you're noticing those things coming out of their mouths, like, maybe having a chat about that if you feel comfortable about it. And I, you know, people will appreciate that because you never know. Like for me, I think about it. This is like when someone says those like diety comments of like, I need to make up for this, or I was so bad yesterday. You never know who was around, who's like struggling with eating disorder, or like disordered eating or trying to recover from that. Or is just really impacted by those comments. Like they seem so innocent, but they really aren't. They can really have an impact on people. So yeah, just being really mindful.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is this a problem that primarily exists in North America?
I mean, I think it's unfortunately becoming more common. But I was just talking to somebody about this today, is like, you know, I think we have this idea that the whole, you know, thin is good, fat is bad, is just kind of ingrained and natural, when like really it's very socially constructed. Is like historically, fat, being fat was good. It was like an indication of like affluence and wealth and, you know, all these things. And really,
and it still is in some parts of the world.
In some parts of the world, exactly. So I think that's further, you know, evidence that this whole obsession with thinness is socially constructed and not necessarily based in health or well-being.
I think the positive thing too is that you can look to that and see hope for the fact that we can change the way that we look at that as well.
For sure. And I think it's just, it's interesting, I find, because in some ways I think it's getting better. Like I see, you know, positive, encouraging things, but then I also see this like increased obsession with like keto diet and intermittent fasting and all these things. And I think a lot of it now is like, but it's not about weight, it's about health. But it's still this like very obsessive, restrictive way of approaching.
Yeah.
Health.
But I think that's always been there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's just been a different
you know,
it was like
diet.
It was the paleo thing before that. And then before that it was Weight Watchers. And like it's
just shape shifting.
Just always just morphing into the next fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And so I don't know if it will, you know, go away in my lifetime, but I do see like positive movement. I'm encouraged by what I see online and in my profession and in healthcare. There's still lots of work to do.
But I mean, I have to say, like, this conversation has been like, super eye opening for myself, because while we were sitting here chatting, like, I'm thinking about moments where something has happened or I've said something, and I'm now realizing how problematic those things were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all, again, just based off of the language that I'm using.
Yeah.
And because I'm ignorant and I don't know.
Yeah.
And
if you've never had to think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, all of us in this culture have these biases, including people who work in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not their fault, but it is their responsibility to work on it, I think. Yeah.
Do you have like professors and stuff that look at you and go, you're fucking crazy. Like, that's not what, this is not based in truth. This is,
I'm really lucky, at where the university I'm at, where we have several, professors who are really on board with this kind of stuff, and really have exposed me to a lot of these things. So, you know, the people that I work with are really supportive of this kind of work. And, you know, I get a lot of support from all the professors that I work with, but I definitely think that it's still pretty contentious, because the healthcare still has this, I don't know, perspective of like, yes, weight bias is bad. We need to treat people who are in larger bodies better, but also obesity is really terrible and killing people, and we need to take care of that.
Right.
So there's this kind of, whereas I'm, you know, kind of over here in this other camp where it's like, yes, weight bias is bad, but also maybe obesity isn't a disease. Maybe we don't need,
or we don't know enough to like sit here and categorically say like obesity is the problem.
Yeah. Like maybe the actual issue is like social justice bias, poor treatment of fat people, et cetera, and our social obsession with thinness. That to me, that's the problem.
Mm.
It's not obesity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way that we treat people who are different than us.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
I think it's just, as long as you're being kind to one another,
then
you just don't have any problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but really, like, it, like, not to oversimplify it, but like, I think that, that's what I'm taking from this conversation. It's like, I personally need to work on just the language that I use when dealing with this sort of thing, or in my own language in my head, when seeing that person walk by.
Yeah, because you just have no idea what people are going through and what their life looks like. And, you know, really, it's none of our business either.
Do you have any recommendations for, you know, if someone's out there right now listening to this and they're going, fuck, this is blowing my mind. I want to know more.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of resources are out there that people can go to? I know you said that Food Psych by Christy Harrison.
Yeah. Great. One. Really great podcast. There's like 250 episodes. She just also released a book called Anti-Diet that's really good and covers a lot of this stuff of like the history of diet culture and all the problems with weight science. There's also a book I really like called The Fuck It Diet by Caroline Dooner. That's really good. And kind of like the OG book about non-diet approaches to health is called Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch. And there's also a good workbook that people can like and work through it.
Cool.
And then there's another book called Body Respect by Lindo Bacon and Lucy Afremore that covers also some of the science behind health at every size. So that paradigm that I mentioned earlier.
Cool.
And yeah, if I think of anything else, I can probably, because I think I'll probably post something on the website.
We'll put it up in the blog.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Mare, thanks for this. This is,
I'm just sitting here so confused about all of the things that I've ever thought about, like
your whole world was flipped upside down
and all of this stuff, because I'm like, now okay, where did that source come from, that information? I'm like, why do I look at that thing that way? And you know, I heard that everybody should do keto diet because it gives you all this energy and it's good for you for all these reasons, but like now I'm just,
any of that right? I have no idea.
I want to say on that point, Brian, like if you're currently listening to this driving your car from work or to work or doing the dishes or whatever, and you are hearing this and you are having a reaction of like, of negativity based off of what you heard, just take a breath and maybe go back and re-listen to this with really open ears and an open heart and just consider this side of the argument that you probably haven't ever considered.
Yeah.
I think I feel like I've
and let that digest.
I think I feel like Meredith, like you've given me just a new lens to look at things with. And again, like I like not using good or bad. It's just another way to look at it, another way to be conscientious and consider about the decisions that I make. But not, I think I want to, the biggest takeaway is like, it's not about the decisions that I make and what I do, but more so about how that affects other people and the way I interact with other people surrounding these types of topics. Because ultimately we can only control what we do as individuals. And if we all take ownership of our actions and try to be more compassionate, more considerate, and not judge and jump to conclusions, then the world will be a better place.
I agree.
Fucking mic drop, Brian. Jeez.
And yeah, if people are listening to this and feeling like really fucking uncomfortable, I am not surprised because it's really different and outside of like the realm of what we think about. And I felt like that for a while too. So it's okay. Just like keep thinking about it, listening to other things, reading some stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
And having this chat with us. And thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week, as we always are, with another fantastic conversation. But in the meantime, do us a favor. Go to Apple Podcasts and hit the subscribe button and leave a rating and a review. And when you're done that, go to www.patreon.com/sickboy and give us money.
Yeah. If you're the type of person who've listened to like almost all of the Sick Boy episodes,
You owe us at this point.
And you don't support us on Patreon. I wasn't going to say you owe us.
Oh, it's bananas. You owe us for sure. I mean, think about how much you paid your Netflix subscription and how much Netflix you don't watch. And then think about how much of us you do listen to for free.
And then also think about the fact that there's actually more content available on Patreon if you do.
There is, And you'd be paying for that content.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks to
Donovan. Thanks.
For the amazing sound design. You were here in town last night playing some music, and I didn't get to see you. So if you want to play us out with one of your songs, That would be really amazing.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
How about that, Donovan? And I think that's it, right?
Yeah. That's
yeah. Thanks to Jamesy too, but, they're not really a band anymore. I don't think.
Can we hold on for a second? Cause I wanted to read something that a Patreon.
Yeah. Okay. I'll vamp a little more. Donovan, just to let you know how much you mean to us. I got nothing. I got nothing. Can you hurry up, Ryan? I'm feeling a little awkward now.
Well, we just cut. We'll just cut right into this part where I just all of a sudden, out of the blue, go, "Hey!" So on Patreon, we have a sub little hashtag thing group area where you can write. And it's called. It's for testimonials. You can leave testimonials, and we read them on the show. And it's called Testies, the Testies channel.
Oh yeah, right. on our Discord.
So I just want to read a testimonial from Megs, who's one of our moderators on Patreon and is always involved in our Discord conversations in the community. Really great person. She wrote, "As a late 30s woman who has fertility/hormone issues galore and struggles with anxiety and depression, I love how these guys normalize the nutty parts of life and the human body. I support this podcast because the world needs a little more empathy and a little more laughter. Thank you for all that you do and for representing those who aren't always represented in the mainstream media. My favorite Sick Boy is Brian."
Okay. I was with you for most of that, but that last little sentence was a bit off.
I honestly love how she said
nutty in the Testies channel. I bet you she did that on purpose. Good one, Meg. Yeah. High five. That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Meredith.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.